Hello, friends. Kyle Tierman here. And before we get this podcast going, I am going to read the first paragraph from a book I am enjoying greatly. It's a book you may have heard of. It's called The Pearl by John Steinbeck. The whole book's about 90 pages long, and I'm enjoying it greatly. Can't believe I've never read it before. For those of you who listen to this podcast often, you know that I start many of these episodes by recommending books that I'm digging. So here is paragraph one of chapter one. Kino awakened in the near dark. The stars still shone, and the day had drawn only a pale wash of light in the lower sky to the east. The roosters had been crowing for some time, and the early pigs were already beginning their ceaseless turning of twigs and bits of wood to see whether anything to eat had been overlooked. Outside the brush house in the tuna clump, a covey of little birds chittered and furried with their wings. That's the first paragraph. And the reason I read that is because I'm going to start reading more short books, one a month. That's a goal of mine. And if you would like to come along on that little journey, if you think that books are too long, generally, as I do, it's going to be a little book club. I'm still figuring out exactly how I'm going to structure it. I might just highlight and share little passages that I'm enjoying from a book throughout the month. But starting August 1st for that month, we're going to do The Pearl by John Steinbeck. So if you want to join the club, if you need a little extra push to start reading, and you want to read short books, buy John Steinbeck's The Pearl from your local bookstore and sign up for my newsletter on Substack. You can go to tierman.substack.com. That's where I upload all my podcasts. That's where I share articles. That's where it all happens. Tierman.substack.com. It's also where you can support this podcast. If you get value out of this as a media source, just a few bucks a month, the equivalent of buying me a cup of coffee every single month, really does help. It adds up, and I'm grateful to all of you who are paid subscribers. And if you can't do that, no worries. Just keep listening, enjoying the show, keep being a good person. That's it. Speaking of good people, I had a chance to catch up with my longtime buddy Tyler Fox recently. Tyler, if you're in the surfing world, that name may ring a bell. He is a consistent finalist in the Mavericks Big Wave Contest year after year. Consistently rides some of the smallest surfboards out at Mavericks. I think he was on something like an 8-10 board for years out there. Very good at making late critical drops, very good at going left and right, and cat-like reflexes. He takes his small wave surfing into the big stuff, and it's why he's been such a standout in all different kinds of waves for so many years, and I am grateful to call him a friend as well as a surfing mentor. We talk about this a little bit in the podcast, but I reached out to Tyler when I was maybe 16 because I wanted to get into surfing heavier waves. I wanted to get into training. Tyler has always been an example of someone who takes his training seriously. As we talk about, he comes from a long line of great genetics, including his father, who still smokes him in bike rides. So we just caught up. I hadn't seen him in a while. This is a podcast that was a bit meandering. We talk about Tyler's tiny home. We talk about the ending of the chapter of Santa Cruz Waves, which is a local magazine. If you've been through Santa Cruz, you've probably seen it. Very high quality magazine. It's where I got my start as a writer. And we talk about lots of inventions that Tyler is working on. He is surfer / entrepreneur / inventor, and always a damn good time listening to his perspective on things. So please give it up for my friend and your hero, Tyler Fox.
Kyle Cameron here. I'm in Cape Town.
I was the only journalist in northern Nigeria.
It's not an adventure until you get lost in Tijuana.
You get caught inside by a giant wave, you feel really alone.
I love the adventure of waking up and not knowing what will happen and that being my job.
I'm standing at a desert oasis right now.
A lot of tourists don't see this part of Bali.
Smiles and thumbs up.
Welcome to the
One test, test, test.
Testicles.
Testicles. Tyler, your home is like a Saharan hovel.
What's a hovel?
I don't know. I think a hovel is like a, I don't know, a home of sorts.
Yeah.
It's warm in here, man.
We're in a heat wave.
We're in a heat wave. Summer is upon us, my friend. And we are here in your tiny home, which I thought was just a crazy idea when you told me about it. And I'm still thinking it's kind of crazy because it's hot in here, man.
Well, I could open up some doors and windows, but that would harsh our mellow as far as wind and noise.
No,
right?
It's okay.
So we can't open up anything.
It's a pod and a sauna at the same time. So people can't see us. What is this? This tiny home is pretty sweet, man. So we're sitting in the living room. Just next to us is the kitchen, and just above that is the bedroom.
Correct.
All in what's the square footage of this home?
It's a little over 200 square feet.
All right.
So it's on a 8.5 foot wide trailer, 27 feet long. So, and then we've got a deck that we built around the outside, so that gives us some more space outside. But
which really makes all the difference. If you didn't have this deck, this place would be claustrophobic. But
right.
Luckily, you have an amazing view of the Santa Cruz Mountains and even a little chirp of ocean that I can
chirp.
See there.
Yep.
Yeah, this place is cool. So what gave you the idea for the tiny home?
Yeah, so growing up in Santa Cruz I just love the area, and we don't really want to move away, even though a lot of people are being forced to move just because the cost of living is so high. And my wife and I were, this is kind of during the pandemic, and we're thinking, okay, what do we do? How can we start living in town and you know, formulating some roots here? She's a wedding planner, and I run a media company, Santa Cruz Waves and stuff, but you need to make a lot of money to basically pay rent or own here. And we started getting into watching Tiny House. There's actually a show on YouTube
videos. YouTube videos. You got into YouTube videos, didn't you?
Living big in a tiny house. This guy Bryce, he's got like 4 million subscribers on YouTube.
Wow.
Insane. But he just goes around to all these tiny houses all over the world, interviews people and takes tours of their houses. And we're just like, God, that's so cool. There's so many different ideas that you can do. And
he goes to other people's tiny homes.
Correct.
Celebrates them.
Yes.
That's cool. Yep. That's super fun.
So that was a lot of inspiration there. And, you know, I think just knowing enough people here in town, we kind of started putting out the feelers. And hey, anyone have any extra land that we can put a tiny house on? And we scoped a few spots, and it wasn't quite right. And then I ended up finding a spot whose family, whose dad said, I have a piece. I used to coach his son surfing. And he's like, yeah, I got a little piece kind of right here. You know, it's pretty small, but, and then Paige and I came out and checked it out, and it was like, oh my gosh, like, look at this place. It happen.
You had a vision.
Yeah.
And when T-Fox has a vision, he makes it the burden of dreams. That's T-Fox's cross to bear. He sees vision. He goes all in on it.
We did. So.
Yeah, that's cool. You know, I a few months ago, last winter, went up to Bolinas and did an interview with this guy named Lloyd Kahn, who has written, he's a builder. He's like 90 something now. Total legend, like still super in shape, could probably kick your ass. And he was really like a Renaissance man of the 1960s in the alternative building movement.
Right.
So he built, he wrote this book called Dome Book, which is all about geodesic domes.
Right, that's right.
He wrote
the name, yeah.
I think he kind of coined the name Tiny Home too.
Right.
Like he wrote a book called Tiny Homes, which is his most popular book. And then he has another one called Tiny Homes on Wheels, which is like van life before van life.
Right.
And it's like, he's just lived this life of asking the question, like, how do humans dwell?
Yeah.
You know, what are the various dwellings of humans? Like, and even in his book, he wrote this one book called Shelter. Mm-hmm. It's sick. It's like this huge coffee table book. Mm-hmm. And he goes back into the history of shelters and like some of the earliest nomadic societies and how it's developed. But I interviewed him. I'm super bummed I didn't really do it as a podcast. I should have just done the fucking pod. It was so stupid of me. I just like, I'm going to set up my phone and one of the great blunders of my life.
We'll reach back out to him.
I should. It's kind of one of those things where you like do it once. You
know,
but hey man, I should have released that.
Yeah.
But he has a really interesting story because he saw Buckminster Fuller. Do you know who that is? So he's like, Buckminster Fuller was this inventor who, he didn't invent geodesic domes, but he popularized them and was this like luminary of the 1960s. Mm-hmm. And Lloyd saw Bucky Fuller speak at Esalen Institute in Big Sur, which is like Esalen Natural Hot Springs. And back then, Esalen was this place where all these alternative thinkers would go and speak. Mm-hmm. And Lloyd was working on a piece of property in Big Sur at the time. And he had convinced the owners of the property to like let him fuck around with some alternative building designs. Went and saw Bucky speak, became totally enamored with this idea that geodesic domes were going to save the world. Because Bucky was preaching this thing that like the idea that you could build these domes more cheaply, they're lighter weight,
withstand weather, I'm sure, because of their shape, and
that was the idea. Yeah. And that, you know, 50 years from now, every home is going to be built like a geodesic dome. So Lloyd becomes like the go-to guy on how to build domes as they're popularized through the 60s. Mm-hmm. There were entire communities of people who would build geodesic domes. Came out with this book called Dome Book, and then another one called Dome Book 2. Hugely popular books. But as it was becoming popular, more and more people were coming up with complaints about geodesic domes. Like, these things fucking fall apart.
Oh, really?
They leak. Like, they're super expensive to do any add-ons to because they're, you know, you build with 2x4s, right? And geodesic domes have all these awkward angles that require custom expensive builds.
Right.
So I wrote an article about it, but Bucky was like, he took mescaline up in Bolinas and had this epiphany that he needed to like renounce domes publicly and like take the books out of print. And he fucking did it. And the publisher was like, what are you doing? He's like, this is like my karma. Oh my and like, God. I need to be honest about this. So he's like really spent the last 50 years, like among, you know, being a total pioneer in other aspects of building, like basically saying like, hey, I was wrong about this, but that's what it takes to innovate, you know?
That right. And maybe he wasn't wrong. Maybe we're just not ready for that.
Yeah.
You know, materials that we use, right, are just so standardized with the 2x4 that, you know, maybe I'm sure there's ways you can do it that they don't leak and that they're, you know, will work. But
totally. Yeah. And maybe culture just wasn't ready for it. I learned this concept recently. It's an acronym called MAIA, which is most advanced yet acceptable.
Hmm.
So you can look at innovation through the lens of Maya. And like, you can ask yourself the question, like, if Apple came along maybe 10 years earlier, would they have been too advanced for culture? Right. And would culture have rejected the idea? Right? Like, you can come up with amazing innovation, and if culture isn't ready for it, to your point,
right,
they'll reject it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Good point.
Yeah. So I feel like you've always been kind of like I see you as an inventor more than anything.
I actually would think I am
inventor
a bit of an inventor for sure.
You totally are.
I'm a tinkerer, and I've always tried to find problems to things that aren't necessarily out there yet. And remember the tie board when we were doing training?
Dude, the tie board was great.
That was pretty funny.
Yeah, I mean, for people who don't know our long history.
Yeah.
I reached out to you when I was like 16 and said that I wanted to get into surfing bigger waves, and I just wanted to become a better surfer, and I wanted someone to train with.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, hell yeah, Grom. Yeah. Let's do this.
Yeah.
And I went over to your house, and you had built this contraption that was like, it was like a super advanced Indo board.
Right. Yeah.
like an Indo board that was just really, really hard.
For sure. Yeah. You're balancing on basically a bocce ball on a wooden platform with bungee cords that you can hold on to on each corner. And it was wild. It was really hard. And I think that's what probably why I didn't move forward, is because someone would have broken their neck on it. But
it was too advanced.
As far as the training, man, like, I've never felt so many fast twitch muscles in my legs in my life, you know?
Dude, we would hop on that thing. We had the funniest workouts, dude. Like, the Tyler Fox workouts were so good and so random. Like, we would hop on the tie board and then we would throw balls to each other, and you'd have to catch the ball while on the tie board.
Right.
And then we'd do like standard shit to like, all right, we're going to go on a run up this hill so your legs are tired, and then go back on the tie board and try and do these like squats and different movements that were freaking hard, man.
Yeah. Well, you look at what all these young surfers are doing now with their training and all these funny looking movements, but you know, they work, and they get the body to adapt and to adjust, and, you know, eye hand coordination, like dropping tennis balls and catching them and twisting certain ways, and it all that stuff's super functional, you know. So there's a reason why these people are doing it.
Yeah. Like, getting people off balance, right? It's like, how can you get strong and be able to maintain balance?
Yeah.
Because if you're just doing standard squats, sure, your legs are going to get big, but you're going to get pushed over the second you're on uneven surface.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Our friend Matt Myers, who's a coach and traveling around coaching young up-and-coming surfers, interviewed him.
Uh-huh.
Also didn't do a podcast. Should have done the podcast. It's for a written article. And every time I finish these interviews, I'm like, God damn it. I should just always do a podcast.
You should have your podcast kit with you at all times.
He's crushing it right now, dude. He's helping a lot of these young surfers through Myers mentorship, like, get the best results of their career.
Right.
And when he's preparing with them on the beach, he's using a lot of these modalities from Santa Cruz Movement, which are these goofy looking exercises to get the surfers off balance, and they really work. So he'll like have the surfers stand on one leg and then get a stick and have them like go out and try and touch the stick at different angles, low, high, side to side, and man, it helps then getting in your heat and trying to pull shit off.
For sure. Yeah, it's wacky, but it works.
Yeah. What would you say? I mean, people don't know this, but your dad is also a savage. Like, how old is your dad now?
You know what's funny is today is his birthday. Oh. He's turning 79.
All right.
Yeah.
All right.
So, he is national champion road cycling.
For his age group.
For his age group.
He's 79.
Yeah. He's 79, and he's you know, just watching the Tour de France. He's ridden his bike all throughout the French Alps and all those same climbs that they did in the Tour de France. And One of the first few guys to surf Honolulu Bay, took a one-way ticket when he was 16 years old over to Maui, lived in the jungle and ate rice and ketchup like with his buddy. Like,
so sick.
Pretty gnarly. So
rice and ketchup.
Yeah, that's it.
And you'll go on so he lives in Aptos, just out of town.
Yeah.
And like routinely does, how long are his bike rides?
Yeah, I mean, now that he's a little older, I mean, he's still going out for 30, 40 mile rides three times a week and just solo and just going looking for hills. And I try and get out there with him, and it's humbling, you know? And finally, like I'm 42 and he's 79. I'm finally able to drop him in the climbs.
Really?
Yeah.
So took
like
you.
Finally, like, oh my God, it's taken me so long. And he's like, all right, you finally got me.
Well,
bravo.
Biking's involves a really specific muscle group.
Yeah.
And if you're not training for that,
the heart.
The heart. And like, if you see really good cyclists, their calf muscles will get so big that they'll split into two calf muscles, dude. They duplicate calf muscles. They're like, we're going to multiply the calf right now. And I've been getting, my housemate Jordan is a super good biker, mm-hmm. and he's kind of gotten our other housemate Charlie and I into it. So like, we'll go up and like do a lot of these, like I have a, he sold me his kind of beater touring bike that is kind of like a road bike, but you can take it on dirt and cruise around. Dude, you get back after those bike trips and like you are gassed, dude.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
and
it's because I've never really gotten into biking, but it's a pretty cool movement.
It's great. Yeah.
To like, I mean, unless you get hit by a car, it's relatively safe.
Right.
And, and you're, I think it's good cross training for surfing.
It's great. Yeah. I mean, you're hitting the hills, you know, you're getting the heart rate up, and then you're trying to kind of slow it down, you know, and keep that, that tempo going and stuff. So I think it's great training for sure. Great cross training.
I know some big wave surfers, like I think Jamie Mitchell, this guy, Matt Rott, they live in Hawaii, and they go up and do a lot of biking around Pupukea Hills.
Yeah.
I think it's awesome, man. Yeah. I'm totally sold on it. And it's like, hiking's fun, but to be able to go out and really, you're experiencing traveling at a speed that you can see a lot, but you're still like ingesting the surroundings in a way that you aren't in a car, obviously.
Yeah. You could get an amazing workout in an hour and a half cycling, whereas like hiking, unless you're running, it's going to take you a little while.
Yeah. So over the years, you know, what have you found to be the most important training workouts that have been able to kind of keep you in shape and keep you saying yes to gnarly adventures?
That's a good question. I think being well-rounded, and a lot of like going cycling, going hiking, going paddling in the ocean, going spearfishing, all these things kind of add elements to your overall health that I think is important. You know, if I were just cycling every day, I wouldn't feel as calm under the water 20 feet, you know, like you get when you spearfish. You know, you just all of a sudden, if you're going regularly, you're like, okay, I feel calm down here. I can hold my breath, and you're training that aspect of your body. So, you know, I think just like they say in the gym, you know, mix up your weight training. Like, don't always just do the same thing. Your body likes to be challenged, and I think that's the same theory with just overall activities. So try and just mix it up, and it's also fun. You know, if you're doing different stuff, it's like, okay, this is fun. This is exciting.
Totally.
I'm not doing this every single day. I go to the gym once in a while, but I just, it's probably like the scene in these gyms, but like, I don't know how people can just go every day and do the same thing. And that just seems like it would get really, really boring.
Yeah.
But
totally. Some people can do it. I can't. I need a huge amount of novelty for myself to like stay active and engaged. But that's really my goal, is like, I want to be able to say yes to whatever someone offers, invites. Right. Hey, we're going to go do a week long backcountry hunting trip.
Yeah.
all right, Mavs is going off. Let's say yes to that. Yep. All right, let's go spearfishing.
Right.
You know, out at some island. Like I just want to not lose it. So you can't. So then when that offer comes, you're like, fuck. Yeah. I just don't really feel. And I've gone through periods where I'm just like working too much, and I just start to feel weak. You know, yeah. Just like you lose your power
for sure.
And it fucking sucks because then you're also not as confident and it like bleeds into all these other aspects of your life. Like,
right, right.
And it's cool because I was not training before I met you.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually think that I've reflected on this. Like, you're the one who gave me my first Mavs gun. You're the one who got me into training and like built a lot of these habits that have sort of like in many ways like defined my life. Whereas now like I can't sleep if I don't work out now. That's like a fucking you know.
No, for sure. And I've gotten that a lot from my dad. You know, you see him and just having those training partners, those people to help and push you and motivate you, I think it does wonders because it's a little hard to get motivated when you're solo.
Totally.
Just to go do something gnarly.
So I want to ask also, I don't think I've ever talked about this on the podcast, about skydiving.
Okay.
And the Black Pearl.
The Black Pearl. Oh, the Black Pearl. No, okay. Yes. Okay. Where do you would you like this story to start?
Well, we were housemates at the time. You know, so after we I was grown, we started training together. I ended up moving into a little surf shack and you moved in as well for a few years. And around that time, you got a surfboard. Let's start with what the Black Pearl is.
Okay. So the Black Pearl is a nickname of a tiny little, I think 4'2" oval shaped carbon fiber surfboard that had straps on it. And the idea behind this board is that it would suck to my chest when I would jump out of an airplane when I was into skydiving. And mid flight, after I pulled the parachute, I would disconnect the Black Pearl from my chest, put my feet in the straps, and then proceed to parachute down and disconnect and land on a wave. So it was a stunt of all stunts. And
who shaped the board?
Travis Reynolds.
Travis Reynolds, yeah.
Local Travis Reynolds and my buddy.
He shaped a lot of our big wave boards.
Right. Amazing shaper. And yeah, my buddy Matt Rosado, who's an avid wingsuit skydiver, just madman.
He
helped me through the process and
very calculated.
Very calculated. Yes. Yeah. So I mean, he's gone all over Europe and hucked himself off massive cliffs, and it's dangerous. But he was pretty calculated and is very calculated. And so I kind of felt good having him as kind of my coach through this. But for one thing or, life just happens. And I got out of skydiving a bit and got into some other things, and I just kind of lost the dream.
Well, and I don't think that you just lost the dream, but like you got really into skydiving, which I think was badass and gnarly.
I started skydiving for this stunt.
For the stunt, right.
Yeah.
And then you got pretty into it. Like,
yeah, over 100 solo jumps, which is not that many, but it was
enough to be into it.
Yeah,
I remember when we were living together. I was like, "Let's go surf." And you're like, "Oh, I'm going to skydive this weekend.
Going out to Lodi.
Going to Lodi. Yeah. Lodi skydiving." Yeah,
the place was crazy.
But it sounded like through the research, you found out that landing in water. It's extremely dangerous.
Yeah, I think Kaj, your buddy, who's been on the podcast, he's
Kaj
like,
Larson.
I've been a Navy SEAL, and the most time guys die is when they land and their parachute like wraps around them in the water. So just, keep that in the back of your mind when you're doing this. But I was like, okay,
but
so
I commend you, dude. I think that, as I said, you're an inventor.
Well, hey, maybe my midlife crisis, when I reach 50, I'll have to bring back the dream.
Totally. I think that, you know, it's fun being around you because you're always kind of looking at life through this lens of like, oh, what could it be? Like, and you just refuse to get deterred, you know? And I think that you've been able to, you know, the more ideas you have and the more shit you're just throwing at the wall, the more exciting life gets.
Right.
You know, it's kind of the opposite of being set in your ways.
Yeah. Yeah, I try not to be set in my waves.
Yeah,
too much, so
you want to be set in your waves, not in your waves.
I want to get set waves.
You want to get set waves. well, and you, I mean, we could just keep going on T-Fox adventures forever, but and inventions. But one thing you brought up was like on this pod is like, hey, you're taking this new business a little bit more seriously with the sales.
Yeah.
Tell me about this. I've seen these. They're cool.
Yeah. So it's been a project I've been working on for a while now. I'm using old vinyl banners. You know, a lot of the businesses print up signs or for high schools or, you know, events. You know, people print out these big banners and they're made of vinyl. A lot of times that material gets used once or and then it just ends up going to the landfill. And and then also kind of the same thing with windsurfing sales. It was a sport super popular. It's still popular in certain areas, but there's a lot of old windsurfing sales collecting cobwebs in people's attics and backyards. So I was like, how could I take these two things and turn them into a product? And not only a product, but a product that like I also felt like there was a need, which is surfers or anyone in a wetsuit changing out of that wetsuit on dirty gravel, you know, on a beach, on anywhere, you know, we change out of wetsuits so often and oftentimes we're like balancing on one foot on one shoe, yep. You know, like
yep. I'm always shirt dressing it. You're always like, Kyle, dude, you're going to end up on Megan's Law. You got to start using a towel, bro.
Exactly.
I refuse.
But
let me be me.
I know.
Don't
so
yuck my,
I know what I'm getting you for Christmas is a towel.
That's all I need. That's really all I need. Yeah, dude. Well, and one of the quickest ways to ruin your wetsuit is changing on gravel
right,
or the ground.
Right. So these upcycled surf backpacks have a built-in changing pad. So that just folds down. It's vinyl. You unfold it, and then you've got a nice, sturdy, clean changing pad. Shove your wetsuit into the pack, fold it up, and off you go.
How did you invent this? What was the first prototype? What did that look like?
Yeah, I mean, I found some old sails. I think Richard Schmidt gave me some of the first sails, so and actually bought one of the first capture packs, so thank you, Rich. But it started from a sketch, right? I think that's how a lot of things start, just a simple sketch on a piece of paper. Very simple, it's kind of a square backpack. And then I was the real functionality of it is the how does the mat stay on the pack, right? And so, you know, how does it fold? And so I just started doing these iterations of how it folds and wraps. And so then I went to a local guy, helped me do some prototypes and got a certain ways. And then there, I think it was through COVID or something, and then kind of got put on the back burner. And then I've actually just worked with another guy who helped me refine the pack even more, like so it's actually turning into a real looking product. And now I'm speaking with somebody in Boulder, Colorado, who can actually produce them at scale. So
sick.
Really excited to.
So do you need to, is it kind of like Breo, which takes old fishing nets and turns them into all kinds of different products? Is it kind of like that where you need to ship the sails and all that stuff to the facility?
Yeah. So thankfully they've offered to provide the vinyl banners.
Okay.
Because every town all over America has got vinyl banners that, you know, are just going to waste.
Right.
However, I'm doing the sourcing and the cutting of the windsurfing sails here in Santa Cruz.
Got it.
And then I'm sending all that to them.
Okay.
So.
Yeah. You've gotten into sailing. So you're kind of like, that. Is that your like great ploy? You're like, I'm going to get good at sailing. I'm going to spend a lot of time in the Santa Cruz Harbor.
So
and they're going to give me my sails.
So these are not.
Make millions.
These are not sailboats. These are windsurfing.
Right.
So they're like from the 80s and 90s with all these amazing colors and graphics and things.
So sick.
But the sailboat sails could totally work as well, but they don't have the flair.
You need the flair.
So,
But you have been getting into it, so that's where that's at. And what's it called?
Capture packs. Yeah.
Can people get a capture pack yet?
We have no inventory.
No inventory
right now.
Wow.
Gotta make them wait. No,
that's a good.
But yeah, it's
good problem to have.
It is. I'm just about to put an order in now, and it should take about 8 weeks.
Where can people get them at? Where can people pre-order them?
Yeah, right now we're working on the website. People could reach out to Capture Packs on Instagram.
Okay.
It's always a good way to do it. And if they're interested, we'll put their name down and be good to go.
Get your pre-orders up, yeah, bro.
I know.
Get it out.
I know.
Get it out. But you have been getting into sailing.
Yes.
That's been...
Love sailing. It's so fun.
You've kind of become a Captain Ron in the past couple of years, dude. Yeah, dude. You're looking...
I'm thankful
to... You have a tan that doesn't go away now.
Oh, I know. This sailor... I get why sailors have gotten their... the stigma of sailors or the stereotypes is because, yes, they're in the sun all the time.
They're literally salty.
They like to drink, so they're usually red in the face, and I like to drink. So, it's been super fun. I have a couple really good friends that have boats, so I hear that's the secret. Don't own your own boat. Have friends with boats.
That's what they say. And have you done any big voyages?
I did one. I did a crossing from Tahiti up to Hawaii. So it was, I think, 1,500 nautical miles. And it took about 2 weeks out at sea. It's pretty eye-opening. A lot of ocean. A lot of time to think.
Wow.
Out there.
What an adventure, man. Were you surfing on that trip at all?
Yeah, we stopped at Chopu and had the boat anchored there and kind of like we're waking up and looking over the channel and looking and checking the waves and taking a little dinghy out to the break and stayed there for, I think, about 4 days, and it was amazing.
Was it smooth sailing across, or did you have any...
For the most part, it was pretty smooth. We had a few squalls, which squalls are, for those that don't know, are very kind of condensed, localized, like storm systems. And when you're seeing them out on the ocean, it's pretty frightening, actually, because they're like black. They're like black clouds and just... You see the water coming down and they're out and you can see multiple squalls like on the horizon and you're like, oh shit, are we going to hit this one? And you know, you're getting closer to it and it happens fast. So, and so squalls can be, the intensities can vary. So some can be really violent and some aren't as bad, but you kind of never really know. And that's why open ocean, you know, crossings are an adventure, is because shit can happen out there and you're on your own, right? It's like you can't call vessel assist out, you know, that it's going to come out of the Santa Cruz Harbor and be there in 20 minutes to tow you in. No, you're literally on your own out there. And you know, there are other sailors, you know, we have radio and so you can ask for help, but these big crossings, it's like you don't see anyone or any land for miles and miles.
What do you do when a squall comes in? Do you just want to make sure that the sails are not up?
Yeah, well, a lot of times you can keep the sails up, but you can reef the sails. So it's just basically pulling down the main sail or even the jib, which is the sail in the front, but basically having less sail area. So when something does hit you, it's not going to overpower the boat.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah.
And you said that you're surfing Chopu.
Yeah. Got.
Was that your first time there?
No, I had been there before, but I kind of got skunked. So this time, we had some really fun like afternoon sessions, like 4 foot, you know, and glassy and just amazing, just collecting wave after wave, and got a so that was a fun window. And then I got one like proper day, like 6 to 8 foot, where what's the phenom out there?
Matai, is it?
Drele?
Medora, is it?
You're just, Matai, butchering.
No, it's like Matai Medora.
Matai, Drill. Is it not Drele? Okay, we should just stop just trying to say his name.
We all know who we're talking about.
But the kid's incredible. Yeah. And he was out there and just really, really impressive. He had this wave mastered and just taking off so deep and like looking down, and it was really impressive. But I got a few that day, but when it gets over that 6-8 foot mark, it's a whole different wave, because it sucks off the reef and down, and I almost feel like it's like the backs don't get any bigger. It's just folding over the reef at a bigger size. It's an absolute wonder of a wave. It's incredible. So
wow.
You got to get there.
Yeah, I would love to. And I was talking to, I think, Nat Young about it, and he's like, what's crazy is you need to take off so much deeper than you think to actually get barreled.
Yeah.
Did you feel that?
Yeah, there's a couple different takeoff spots. There's kind of like way up the reef, and there's kind of like a West Bowl. That guys can kind of sit at. I mean, you could take off deep and you could go for it. I think you're just moving so fast at this wave.
Right.
Right. So a lot of times you can outrun the barrel.
Right.
But it's impressive.
That's fun. That's super fun. So you were on that trip for 2 weeks?
Yeah, was on that trip for 2 weeks. The actual crossing itself was 2 weeks, and then, you know, spent about a week, under a week at Chopes. So
that's super cool.
Yeah.
Was it everything that you thought it would be? I think that a lot of people have sailing dreams. They get the sailboat.
Yeah.
Then they realize, ooh, this wasn't for me.
Yeah. No.
I think there's a great philosophy in renting before you buy,
for sure,
and trying shit out before you know. People can spend years being enamored by some dream that is total, or career, or this or that, without ever like, oh, you want to be a firefighter, do a ride along,
right?
Like,
yes,
before
exactly.
Before going into fire school,
right,
for years.
It is a very alluring dream to just get a sailboat and sail around the world, but and it's totally doable. But I think, like you said, testing it out, going out with friends, going out in your local waters as much as you can. And crossings are different too, because it's work. You don't get a lot of sleep. You know, you have your watches, basically, so you sleep for 3 hours and then you get up at, you know, middle of the night or whatever, and basically need to stay awake and watch to make sure you're not going to run into a tanker or something. So you're not getting all this nice 8 hours of sleep on a boat, and you're doing that day after day, and you're fishing, and then something breaks and you're fixing that. And so, you know, it's work. And that's why people just go to places like the Mediterranean or Croatia, and they just charter boats, because it's like they're taking all the work out of it, and then they're just going and enjoying the cruisy lifestyle.
Right. Right. So. Yeah. It's not just like a Mentawai boat trip where you got a crew hustling and,
right,
you know, got a nice cold Coca-Cola waiting for you when you're done surfing.
Exactly.
That's super cool. So it was hard work.
Yeah.
Do you think you have more sailing in your future?
Oh yeah. No, I want to own a boat, and sail all over the world. I think that would be incredible, and I'm gaining some confidence, and just the places that you can get to, you know, I mean, there's no roads where we're going. There's no roads.
Well, yeah. And the more competent you get, the more invites you get.
Yeah.
Right. So you're not just if you're some kook, you know, boat owner is not going to want to bring you along, cause you're not going to be helpful.
Sure.
But once you get to the level, you know, you were mentioning the other night, we went out on our friend's boat.
Yeah.
And, you're like, yeah, you just get more opportunities the right. better you get.
Right, right.
And you had to turn down a trip that you
yeah.
mentioned even.
Oh, man, that was a tough one to turn down. It was from New Zealand to Easter Island, and then after that, going down into French Polynesia. And, you know, it would have been work, too, you know, for sure. Like, you're going over some gnarly ocean. But Easter Island, that's on the bucket list. I would love to go there. And French Polynesia is just dreamy. So, yeah, but you know, hopefully there'll be more opportunities.
Totally.
Yeah.
That's awesome. So, but for now, the tiny home.
For now, the tiny home needs work, and, I've got gardening to do. So,
you have been, you know, as we've continued on with T-Fox Inventions, this is the inventor episode.
Okay.
You floated maybe the craziest invention that I've seen you come along with thus far.
Okay.
And it sounds like this is kind of a main project for you right now.
Okay. What is it? are you letting me? So I think you're... alluding to Swell Cycle, this new company that...
It was actually the gerbil that carried mail. That was the one I was talking about.
They're
going to strap letters to one? Gerbils and train them to just scurry around town. That was the one I was alluding to, actually.
I've already quit that one.
Okay.
Yeah, didn't...
Too many gerbils got eaten by hawks.
Exactly. Yeah, we had a... supply issue there, but
so yeah, you're doing 3D printed surfboards.
Yep, joined a team, Swell Cycle Surfboards, here out of Santa Cruz, and we're 3D printing surfboards out of recycled plastics, like hospital trays and water bottles and different sort of plastics that would otherwise end in the landfill.
Okay. You're just Mr. You're your own personal recycling center between the sales and Swell Cycle. Okay, so why is this going to work? Sell me on it.
Yeah,
I'm not convinced.
Okay, yeah, no, I mean, it is a new technology, and I think this is gonna work. I believe in it. It's because of a couple factors. One, the customization of it is fascinating. You could 3D scan one of your favorite boards that is in your backyard getting yellow, and you're like, this is a magic board and I've never been able to duplicate it. You can 3D scan it and you can replicate that board down to like the finest of detail. The interior foam is going to be different. The flex is going to be different, but as long as those dimensions and the rocker and everything else, you can get that exact. Another thing that we want to do is set up basically a marketplace, and that this marketplace would allow shapers from all over the world to upload their designs. So, you know, there's incredible shapers in Australia that I would love to be able to try some of these shapes. Right. Well, they could just send their design to one of our hubs here in Santa Cruz, and we could print out that design from that shaper in Australia, or maybe Tokyo, or maybe wherever in the world. There's, I mean, thousands of shapers everywhere. And, you know, so I think it really just opens up a lot more opportunity. And then these shapers also, because I love shapers. I've worked with shapers my whole life. And so what this does is it offers some, this whole new, opens these doors. So now anyone in Australia or Japan could get a Pearson Arrow or whatever, or a Travis Reynolds, you know? And, so it really just, yeah, it opens it up the, doors there. And then another thing that really excites me is that we plan on taking those boards back at the end of the life cycle and actually grinding them up and turning them into new filament that either that goes into printing new surfboards or other products like floor tiles in a house, or different building materials. So, you know, I definitely was passionate about not just the fact that they're printed out of recycled plastics, but what are we doing at the end of their life cycle?
Sure.
And that's a huge thing that plagues the surfboards right now, is the fact that they're almost next to impossible to recycle. They end up in landfill and trash cans. You know, you go to the North Shore and you just look at any trash can on any given day and there's just broken boards all over the place. And those don't really get recycled. So having the ability to take boards back and kind of closing that waste stream loop is really exciting to me. So those are a few of the things.
Have you recycled an old surfboard before, an old 3D printed surfboard, and made it into a new one yet?
No, we're in the R&D of that.
Okay.
And we're currently, we've only printed, probably a dozen boards right now. So this is still fairly new. I mean, the 3D printer is actually custom built from our founder in his garage. So
it literally came from the garage.
It is. It's a garage startup. Wow. Right now. And but we're evolving fast and we're talking with a lot of great people. I actually spoke with the guys at Boreo and he introduced me to some other guys. And so we're figuring it out. We're going to, you know, if there's a will, there's a way, and we want to. That's a huge element of our business plan, is to be able to recycle these at the end of their life.
It's exciting. I saw you surf one of the boards.
I did.
I mean, it seems like there's a lot of different options for them.
Yeah.
Do you? What would you say to a shaper who's like, "Fuck you guys! You're trying to take jobs away from local shapers."
Right, and that's valid, but I also think that it's going to offer up a lot more passive income in actuality for these guys, because they could just have a design like an Ashley Lloyd longboard design. And she doesn't need to shape a bunch more of those boards. Her, that just design, that 9.2 and this volume and this rocker and everything can live on the marketplace website. And then anywhere that board gets printed, she would get revenue from that, a percentage or just a flat fee. And so she just can sit back. She can continue to shape boards, but now she's like, oh, look at my bank account. I must have sold three of my shapes to someone in Australia or whatever. So I think that it's kind of cool. It's going to offer actually a new way to bring in income.
Is there anything like this already on the market? Any other 3D printed surfboard stuff that you know of?
There is. There's a handful of 3D printing companies. The most prominent ones out of France, and they're called Wive Surfboards. And then there's one out of I think Switzerland. I think there's two in France, but they're primarily throughout Europe, And then there's one on the East Coast, I think Cape Cod. So there's a few sort of coming out. You know, I mean, 3D printing technology is just getting more and more popular, and there's more applications for it. So
it scares me, Tyler. The future scares me. I like my handcrafted surfboards.
I know. Well,
I like going and talking to the mega stoner who doesn't get out of the shaping shack ever.
I know.
Has ingested way too many fumes.
Yep.
We'll talk your ear off about tail design for 2.5 hours.
I know.
Has lots of torn out photos of Reef Girl ads from Trans World Surf magazine.
We know who that is.
I just like I like that feeling. I like walking out of a surfboard factory and having the bottom of my feet be so sticky from resin that I can't get into my car. That's the world I want to live in, T-Fox.
You can stay in that world. go ahead.
Stay living in the past.
Go ahead.
Yeah. I think it's exciting. I also just knowing you as a stand-up guy, I'm sure that whatever it is that you'll do, you will do it with a lot of integrity, and that I think comes across. And you have people who work with you who also have integrity, and I think that talent is the most important aspect of any project. So I think that one of your great skills is galvanizing good people to be in the room to get a project across the finish line.
Cool. Thanks.
So yeah, and I haven't ridden one of the boards. I'll ride it. I'll report back.
For sure. We're talking about a Mavs board.
But just right knowing now. Just knowing you as a person, I think that that's what you have most going for you.
Appreciate it. Yeah. Yeah. And I don't, you know, just to reiterate, we want to bring more attention and make it easier for shapers to make an income in actuality. We don't want to, because these other companies actually are just doing their own 3D printed boards. We don't want to do that. We just want to basically have the technology and have it as an option. Mm-hmm. So.
Got it. Yeah. I mean, I think that we've already, like, if you look at where the surfboard industry has gone just with, the foam boards and with mass manufactured boards, I think that there will always be a market for locally shaped boards. You know, that's, I get my boards locally shaped because I enjoy that experience of, right. Talking with yeah. someone and building that relationship. You know, I think building that relationship is a really cool aspect of the whole surfing experience.
Totally.
So I don't think that's going to, that would have gone away a long time ago if people weren't still really into that.
Right,
so
right.
I doubt that you're going to be taking any jobs away from anyone, even if this works.
Cool. Yeah. Hope not. AI.
I don't want to talk about AI, dude. Jesus Christ. I'm a copywriter. So Kyle, what do you think about AI? AI is not that funny yet. Fuck you. Until it gets funny.
AI is gnarly.
No. Last thing we could chat about is the closing of the chapter.
Oh, SC Waves.
Of SC Waves, or at least a shift in the chapter from what it was.
Right.
You know, when we first met, and you know, even before when you moved in to my house, you were doing Santa Cruz Waves as an online, it was an online publication at the time. You were building an audience for it, and it was really kind of gaining steam. And then while we were living together, I remember you put out the first ever print magazine with Sean Dollar on the front.
Yeah.
And I think you did a good job having it be a really premium look. You know, it was... something that all around Santa Cruz for years and years people would pick up to read about the local happenings in kind of surf culture here. It's where I got my start as a writer. It's where our very talented editor Elizabeth Lombach was working as well. And it's how long did you run the magazine for?
So launched it in June of 2014, so just about just under 10 years.
Just under 10 years.
Was printing.
10-year project.
Yeah.
And just recently starting a new chapter.
Yeah. Yeah, new chapter. So Santa Cruz Ways is just going to stay with its social media.
Mm-hmm.
We're not going to bail on that. But the production costs of a high-quality free magazine are just astronomical. And I didn't, at the end, I had to kind of take a hard look at, am I ever going to be able to like save for a mortgage payment, you know, or a down payment on a house? And like, I think I calculated it. I'm just going to be pretty transparent here, but like I was making like under minimum wage as the CEO and like for all the hours that I was putting into so many different elements of it.
Right.
You know, shooting photos. I was writing articles. I was helping with design. I was, you know, so, and I loved it all. I mean, it was a blast, but I was like, okay, I'd like to evolve out of this tiny house someday. and just, so, financially it didn't work, so I had to just kind of make the hard decision to say, hey, you know what, instead of cutting corners and laying a bunch of people off, and I'm just gonna say, hey, you know, let's end it on a high note and on to the next thing.
Yeah, and I think just on to the next thing, period. You know, regardless, like you were doing that for 10 years is a long time to be doing something.
Yeah.
So to be freeing up that time to focus on something else, I think is a good move, because I also, you know, saw some of the behind the scenes of just how hard you were working on that and what an offering it was to the community, and also what a grind doing a local magazine is.
It is.
You know? So I think that you can look at that as a real special thing that you gave to the community, that, you know, there aren't a lot, even in like a quote unquote tight knit town like Santa Cruz, there aren't a lot of ways for the community to all kind of circle up on ideas. Yeah. And I think that's really what that's what Santa Cruz Waves offered people. Mm-hmm. You know, it was like, hey, we're going to do a feature article on the issue with cruise ships or something like that. You know, that you brought a lot of issues to the forefront of people's minds mm-hmm. that I think otherwise would not have happened, because surfing is such a solitary sport.
Yeah.
We hate people who are surfers hate people. it's not like skateboarding where it's like, hey, more the merrier.
They hate people if they're catching their waves.
Yeah. And just making spots crowded. And it's a grouchy sport. It's a grouchy solitary sport. But as a result, you can easily become pretty disconnected from your own community.
Right.
And I think that Santa Cruz Waves offered that to people, and same with, you know, the Sandbar Shootout surf competition. Yeah. You know, it's one of the rare competitions where you had East Siders, West Siders, South Siders all showing up to the same beach together.
Right.
Which I think is really important. You know, that was cool.
Thanks. It was fun. And thank you for having your Kyle's Corner.
That was sick.
Yeah.
The column.
Corner. Yeah.
And I think that, you know, you're going to take that network. The network is, it's like a network is net worth, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that you're going to take that network into the next endeavor with you, you know, which is pretty darn cool as well.
Yeah, man. Sick.
Sick.
Yeah. It's hot in here, huh?
Dude, I'm so hot in here. Your tiny home is really hot right now. And it's Santa Cruz heat wave, and we should have opened the door.
Okay.
But this was fun catching up with you.
It was a blast.
Where can people get in touch with you if they want to reach out and send you hate mail?
Zorro Del Mar on Instagram is probably an easy one there. If it's regarding Swell Cycle, Tyler@RideSwellCycle.com.
Okay.
And Tyler@SantaCruzWaves.com. I'm still checking that one as well. So
you're going to get some huge VC investor to drop you a line on Instagram and be like, we're going to make Swell Cycle.
That would be nice.
Into the next Tesla. such a blast, my friend.
Yeah, KT.
Always an honor. Let's go for a bike ride soon.
All right, my man. Let's do it.
Hoorah. That's our show. Before you head off into your day, you can go to tierman.substack.com to get my newsletter, my articles, thoughts, ramblings. If you want to hear more from me, tierman.substack.com is the place to be. That's it for now. Thank you so much for tuning in. Get out in the water, whatever body of water is closest to you, lake, river, bathtub, or ocean. I promise it will make your day better. See you soon.